Hello and a very warm welcome to Business by Outra, the sports and business podcast. My name is Kim Schulze and I regularly have the honor of talking to special personalities from the outdoor and sporting good industry. In cooperation with Outra, the ecosystem for the outdoor bike and sports industry, whose digital tools optimize the customer journey and increase the sales of brands and their retail partners. Together, we look at relevant content through the eyes of industry experts and enthusiasts. Hello and a very warm welcome to Spbusiness, the sport business podcast on the media platform Sport1. My name is Kim Schulze and I regularly have the honor of talking to special personalities from the sports and outdoor industry. We look at the market at relevant content through the eyes of an industry expert. I'm really looking forward to my meeting today with Eva Karlsson. Hello, dear Eva.
Hi, dear Kim. Great to be here.
Yes, I'm looking so forward to our conversation because on one hand, I appreciate you as a person so much, and on the other hand, because you have so much to tell. So maybe before we start, can you introduce you in person? And of course, we need to mention you are the CEO of Odini Sportswear. So my first question would be, can you tell us who you are, what makes you tick, and how do you spend your day? Where do I reach you at the moment?
Well, I'm sitting here at home, actually, in my house in Stockholm, Sweden. Outside, I have a window in front of me, and outside is the beautiful forest, which gives me energy every morning and wakes me up early in the mornings this time of year because the birds are singing like crazy, which is amazing. Anyways, I live here with my two kids and my husband and our little rabbit, Mimi, who's right underneath my table right now. She's more like a dog than anything else. So that's me, and I have a Houdini Sportswear, which I've been working at for 20 years, actually. It's a bike ride away, just on the inlet, sitting on the dock on the inlet to Stockholm.
So I have a wonderful picture at the moment in my mind, and I know how much you work and how intense your work life is, and I'm always like very impressed how you balance everything. And as this is now a B2B podcast, we are focusing on that part of your life. But still bringing, of course, everything into what makes you as a person so important for our industry, being together with your partner, Hanna Odini, as a brand. So if you can introduce, how long are you with Odini and how did everything get started?
So Odini, I've been there for 20 years and I followed Odini from a little distance because I was part of the industry for a much bigger international brand back in the days. And Houdini was this rebel in the industry. It was a small niche mountaineering brand here in Sweden. And a rebel, I'm saying that because it was a bunch of female climbers, ski mountaineers, which was extremely unusual, at least in our industry back then.
It was only female by that time.
Yeah.
Oh wow! I didn't know that. Okay.
And for a long time, we were not because that was some kind of strategy, but it just happened to be that way. And if you think about outdoor back then, I mean, I had to wear men's extra small if I wanted a certain type of performance in my shell layer, for instance. I mean, it was really a male dominated industry in every sense of the way, in terms of management and founders of companies, maybe even communications, but at least products. And here came this little mountaineering brand from Sweden who did radically different products that were awesome compared to what was out on the market, and as well, not only for guys but for girls as well.
And you said the
You said the company was already existing for 8 years when you joined. How was the start and how did that happen?
I would say it was a beautiful brand and a beautiful company, but it was extremely small. And the reason for that is probably that maybe it wasn't even meant to become a company, but the products were unique enough to create a demand. So from designing products that they needed for their expeditions and just to make life in the mountains and life on expeditions and days out climbing easier and more convenient, more comfortable, so that you could, you know, concentrate on the experience, on the camaraderie, focus on the good stuff while out there. So that's what was so unique about these products. They didn't, you know, crave your attention. Not a lot of focus on changing layers up and back and forth, getting overheated, taking off a layer and so forth, but rather, you know, being small, smart performance insulation pieces that you could wear all day and not get overheated. And if you had them in your pack, they wouldn't take much space. So really, really great stuff. And that's how it just became a company. There were lots of mountaineers who needed that. You know, back in the 80s, everything was big, bulky, non-stretchy. If you put a sweater in your backpack, it took up all the space. Yeah. If you tried to zip up your technical shell layer on top of a fleece, you sometimes couldn't even, you know, zip up the collar. So we decided to create really technical mid layers and layers to go with a technical shell layer. I guess that's how when I came on board, that's what I did. And we kept on questioning conventions and reimagining things. And I think that is what we've been doing and still do today. Reimagine what product can be, what a company should be and could be, how we can provide you know, smart solutions for outer enthusiasts like ourselves to make life easier or smarter, more fun. But also, I mean, our vision is really to, how can we live the type of life that we love living ourselves, but to do so without having a negative impact on the environment? That was a question we raised ourselves back then.
Yeah, we come later to that part of what sustainability means to you, and everything is so like integrated in your passion and in your mindset and in your motivation. And this is when you start of how you became part of Houdini. It's for me the most interesting thing that you came like hands on with the story, that it was designing products in a you said focus on the good and on the usability. So maybe we can start on that one. What happened throughout all these years? If there are, like, you are allowed to mention, if you would be allowed now to mention like 5 to 8 milestones within that time period, because if you mention those milestones to our listeners, it would be way easier to understand the whole thing, how much you are integrated personality and brand in terms of sustainability. So what are the most important milestones from the last 20 years out of your mindset?
That's a good question, Kim. Well,
not easy, I guess.
Let me see if I... One convention that we immediately, or I immediately questioned when I came on board, that was the fact that outdoor gear, if you buy good stuff, is quite expensive. But back then, many of the things were... I'm going to be honest, I thought they were quite ugly. You know, you pay a lot of things for something that is ugly, that smells bad, and starts peeling after a couple of washes. Ugly but good was an expression that many of my friends had for for the outdoor gear that was around, you know. And why would we have customers pay for stuff or invest in things that that are ugly when we can design them to be beautiful? I mean, and beautiful in the sense that they age with beauty, that they're high quality, but also design lines that that make them even more beautiful, like a tool rather than you know, a garment that you add bells and whistles to make them look more technical. I was more into the minimalist way of designing things, like most tools are, because if you want a tool to work perfectly, it's not about the gadgets, it's about the fundamental choice of material, construction, and so forth. So that's why how we wanted to design our products. And then I think beauty is also, I mean, we are inspired by nature. I am all inspired by nature all the time. And all of these beautiful shades of nature, I mean, I'm looking out the window now and I don't know, there are millions of shades of green. And how can we start getting that inspiration across in our products? So I think we worked a lot on the beauty in product, and that's for sure not only aesthetics, the way we look at it. Beauty is how it functions, the comfort, the relation in between a user and a product, and how that product can create beauty in a system, society or nature. Okay, so that's, Kim, that's only one milestone. I'm sorry, I'm being lengthy here, but I'll try to be quicker. But I think that was actually a really important milestone to question how outdoor gear performs and looks and the context of it much, much further out than the actual product. But a beautiful product, I think we gave that to the industry, and now I see the industry is full of beauty in terms of design. We have evolved into a much stronger position as an industry since then. But then I think another really important milestone, I guess the idea about it came already in 2001 when I joined, and that was, how can we become part of the solution rather than the problem? Because everybody knew, in the industry and some outside of the industry knew, that what we're doing is polluting. We're actually consuming what makes life worth living for all of us, and what makes the outdoor pursuits that we're talking about and inspiring people to go out on, we're consuming the ability to do that in the future. I mean, it was to me a paradox, and something that I mean, either we go ahead and become part of the solution, or I really don't feel like being part of any company in this industry or any other for that matter. So because we have to figure out those solutions. It's our responsibility, really. But it's also an amazing journey. I think the adventure of my lifetime, maybe, to explore solutions to this. I mean, we're not at all at the end of that journey. We're just in the beginning, and we've been doing it for 20 years. But anyways, that decision to decide and commit to becoming a solution and not staying and remaining as a problem, that was a milestone, I think, as well. But that is more mindset than actually finding solutions. Then in 2007, we launched the first circular products. We had to shift supply chain quite radically, which was easy for a small company like ours. We were small back then, so I think we might have shifted 70% of our supply from one season to another, because we could move to somebody who understood and shared our vision of moving from linear to circular in terms of raw materials, and how raw material, we have the ability and technology to circulate raw materials if we design our products the right way, rather than design in the linear fashion where everything at the end of the day becomes waste. and also means that we have to extract new resources all the time. So that was another milestone. At the same time, we initiated a take-back system. So we were kind of closing the loop, so to speak, for some of our products by using recycled polyester, designing pure monomaterial products in this recycled polyester that could, you know, be used for 10 or so years, but at the end of life, or next life, as we call it at Houdini, it could go back to us. We could take responsibility that we wanted to take for that resource to stay a resource rather than become waste. Yeah, and since 80, I think right now 87% of our products are designed with that circularity in mind. So 87% of our products are circular by design, made from recycled material, monomaterial, so that they can be brought back into the loop as a resource.
And as I know you a little, and it's so humble how you say it, can you emphasize for, if having in mind our listeners are part of the industry and of course could be part of the solution and not anymore of the problem, what is that meaning if you say 80% is made of recycled design? Because that's such a huge figure and it's outstanding for all products we have in the market.
It's taken time. I think our maybe most important personalities or whatever I should call it is that we have been patient, but also impatient, and balancing those two. Patient in the sense that we have understood and accept that we have to collaborate with suppliers and technology innovation or transitioning a supply chain takes time, especially if you want to do it with quality, and knowing that you're reducing your impact in one place doesn't just mean that you're, you know, shifting that negative impact to somewhere else that you don't know of. So taking the time, being thorough, having the knowledge, having the scientists or whatever you need at your side to make the right decisions and do it collaboratively. So that takes time and requires our patience. But we also have to be relentlessly impatient in accepting problems that we're causing ourselves by producing tons of stuff in a linear fashion. So I think we built really strong relations with few suppliers. We set common goals with these lovely supplier partners of ours. We explore together, we innovate, we share. And I think that is the mentality that maybe has been the most helpful in our progress from zero circular to 87% circular products, that our philosophy is sharing, meaning open source. If there's an innovation that we can achieve together with one of our suppliers, we see no reason whatsoever to ask for exclusivity for that sustainable alternative, but rather the opposite. It needs to be shared. So if that means that we can have a supplier that does much better business by being able to share a technology that we innovated together rather than selling it only to an exclusive few companies or only to us, which is also a quite common way our industry works, to hide innovations from each other or keep them secret and not share. But we believe in sharing. And as a reflection, can I just add that, you know, humanity had never ever come to where we are today if we hadn't been collaborating as a foundation. We talk nowadays, and I think maybe it's been the talk of a couple of centuries, how competition has been the most important and is the most important way for humanity to evolve and, you know, innovate all the great stuff. But at the foundation, collaboration has been much more important. So we need to get back as an industry and as, the business sector or the corporate world as such needs to get back to a place where we collaborate as a foundation and then have competition as some kind of spice on the top. That's my clear belief and some kind of urgent desire to shift mindset in that sense as well.
And this is so much more than having our conversation just around like how to create the products you do and how to like bring the design into, because the what you're saying is that there is a new way of thinking behind corporate responsibility, because it's a mind shift in a way, way bigger sense. And this is so interesting, because that also means bringing it maybe to some pillars that you have a different mindset for doing business right. And this is so intense, having that conversation with you, because that really means you are already showing that it's possible. And just to make it clear for everybody, like also for me, because it's so huge always to understand living in a corporate world, getting out of this day by day now. But if it's becoming a force of good with the kind of providing a new business thinking, delivering product as a service, creating circular products, and that always, as you were saying, on a co-creative basis of community work, it would be great if you share maybe some concrete examples of your open source innovation work, how you shared knowledge and how you inspired others. Because in our conversations up front, you said it's not only outdoor industry who approaches you at the moment for collaboration.
I think our mindset of collaborating is based on curiosity, really, and the humble realization that we know way too little to manage to do what we want to do. So I think collaboration in that sense has been the only way for us to evolve to where we are today, and we love it as well. I think who wouldn't want to, it's like going on a ski touring trip and you have a bunch of friends with lots of great ideas and you bounce these around and somebody knows more about this and somebody knows more about the other, and together you have a much safer, stronger, more fun trip, and you get back home, mm-hmm. with more in your backpack than you had when you went out, or more in your head and your heart when you went out. And that's the way we have been working with earth system scientists at the Stockholm Resilience Center and Albaeco to understand how our impact is, how we have an impact on the planetary scale rather than the climate, for instance. Climate is really important, but we also have to understand our impact on land, ocean, biodiversity, of course, and so forth. So that has been an eye-opening and wonderful journey, I must say. And then we collaborate sometimes within the industry, sometimes within companies in the apparel industry, but much more fashion than anything else. And we collaborate with car companies, even any companies that have ideas or technologies or ways of working that can cross-pollinate with ours, so that we can evolve from where we are, and also, of course, the other way around, they can evolve. So this cross-pollination in between industries and sectors and academia, business, the civil society, I think that's, and policymakers, not to forget, that is the way we believe that we like working, but it's also much more rewarding in the sense that we get further together.
Yeah, it sounds like.
But yeah, so I don't know if you wanted more specific examples, but
no, it's fine, because if we have the frame how to listen to your mindset, it already helps so much to understand, for example, that there's a huge work before you get there where you are with Odini. It's a huge work with all the stakeholders to make sure that you get the point of everybody of them before you can start sharing knowledge. And this is so nice to see how you have like different pillars in mind with the different stakeholders. So maybe you can pick out one of your, you decide whether it's the very good example or a very bad example where it already worked out fine in terms of collaboration and how to include. Then it's easy to like understand your way in a concrete open source or sharing knowledge. It could be whether car industry, as you said, or textile. Choose what you like.
Yeah, I think I'll choose a project close to home and quite recent as well, and that is our partnership with or collaboration with Polartec, one of our oldest suppliers. I think it was our first supplier, but this particular project is something that we started a dialogue around in 2013. That's when I read the first report on microplastics and realized that although we create high quality products and we know for a fact that our fleece garments or power stretch garments, for instance, are used more than 10 years and very frequently in most cases. And they perform and they weigh more or less as much. So it's not that they release a lot of fibers, but it's an example of where we can, even though we work so hard on becoming part of the solution, realize sometimes that we are actually maybe a tiny, but still a part of the problem. That's not a position we like seeing ourselves in. And we want to get out of that situation as fast as possible, becoming part of the solution. So we joined hands with one of our biggest suppliers, Polartec, to explore ways to shift from problem to solution. And it took years, really, and a journey of learning for both of us, I think. But it's called the Power Air. It traps air in a much more sophisticated way than a regular fleece would. And then we continued the journey from more or less no microfiber shedding to an actually even more beautiful solution, engineering solution, and fabrics technology solution in the Power Air Light. And we call it the Mono Air because for us it's really important that it's a mono material design. It's a beautiful fabric. Performance-wise, I think we have been able to achieve something awesome, really. And that's the beauty of sustainable innovation, the way we've gone into these projects, maybe with a wicked challenge such as microplastics and linear design. Mm-hmm. And then we end up solving those two problems, but also improving performance or something else that we realize that we can improve on the journey. I think that has happened more or less every time we have gone into an innovations project like that, that we actually improve much more than what was originally intended.
Which is so close to what happens at the moment that it's not really presumable. But continue. I didn't want to interrupt you, but it's so amazing to listen to that journey. That is so inspiring.
Yeah, I think it's really not. I mean, linear processes can also be a design or innovation process where you have more or less no space to wiggle and you don't shift perspectives, meaning that you won't realize the flaws at the core of your thinking. But going into a circular mode, exploring new perspectives and taking a systems approach to things, I find that we constantly have the opportunity to explore and innovate in a much more radical way. So we zoom in and out from microbe or molecule or filament or whatever to the outer part of the system, planetary or social or outdoor experience, of course. Mm. So shifting in between these perspectives, zooming in and zooming out constantly during an innovations process, I think that has helped us, you know, really achieve these things. And it took it took years, so we had to be patient. But in this process, we were also impatient because we really, really wanted to not just find something that seemed like a solution, you know, as communication sometimes can help us make something sound much bigger than it is, but really staying with the problem until it's actually something that we've solved and can be proud of.
A short break. Here comes an independent commercial. Commercial done, back to our conversation.
And then we wanted to share it. And that's the thing, I think, that is really important for us in the industry, to start learning and then sharing that knowledge or sharing those technologies so that we can evolve together. That's the only way the planet will survive. And there's no use to be the leader outdoor brand in sustainability when the world goes down.
Yeah.
We don't have much time to waste, or we don't have any time to waste.
You brought it to the point, exactly. And just to explain, I guess the background noises also resemble action, because you mentioned it's your rabbit who's active. So I just wanted to mention.
Oh my God.
No problem.
I'm sorry.
No problem. It's good, but it's just worth an explanation why it's sometimes just a little background noise. So if it comes to exactly that point where you say no use to being the most world-leading sustainable brand, you do have various channels where you inspire, and maybe that's also a short journey worth, because you learn with the new business models. You look at the consumers and you look at the world of how to make a circular model go round. And you already implemented bits and pieces. Maybe you can give a short, brief overview of what you do already in terms of new business models for a brand like you.
Yes, I'd love to. We're exploring, actually since 2012, so quite some years now, 8 years of exploring circular business models. We do rental. We've had a subscription pilot running that was really successful, and that we are very eager to get subscription up and running. And then reuse or vintage Houdini has been sold in our retail locations since back then in 2012. And nowadays reuse is also found online on our webshop. Of course, rental is also online nowadays, not for all countries. We're working on that. But I think the reason for it, I think we have two key stakeholders that we have to address in our work, or maybe three if we include ourselves, but two important stakeholders, and that is the user and the planet. We're stubborn in that sense. If users want something that doesn't go along with our vision of enabling what they want to achieve. Now you can hear a noise, right?
Yes, but it's funny. Continue. It's all fine. It's nature. It's good.
So we have two stakeholders, the customer, user rather, maybe, and then the planet. And if the customer wants something that we believe is contradictory to that, we need to enable or manage for the planet's sake, we wouldn't go there. But to understand both of their needs, and one has a voice, one does not have a voice. Nature doesn't have a voice, so we have to really make sure that we don't forget that stakeholder. That's our responsibility. But anyways, those two stakeholders and looking at sharing gear, I mean, it makes so much sense, really. For a customer, you can have gear that you might not use more than a few weeks per year and rent those instead of keeping them in your closet all year round. That is one example. It makes it more convenient. It also makes it much more financially smart, of course. And you get good gear when you need it for a good for a good price rather than buying something super expensive that just lays around, or something cheap that doesn't perform when you're out there. And I think in terms of convenience, we're still exploring that, because it can become much more convenient, I think, than owning things for a lot of us. Who doesn't have a house full of stuff that they kind of makes them, it's continuous work just to have all that stuff around and making sure that you know where you have it when you need it and so forth. So I think we can do much more there with modern or digital technology. And for the planet, to have resources that are just laying around, that we've extracted, laying around in closets or somewhere else, not being used, that's really not very smart either. So if we can design products that can be shared by many, and we can extend lifetime of those products by, you know, giving them a second and a third life through reuse and repairs, of course, and so forth, that it's a win-win-win for everyone. So really, really fun. And I wouldn't say that customers have been asking us for this. There are many examples in the corporate world, or where innovations have not been based on what customers want, because some of the things that we want, we don't even know that they're possible.
And so
that we would take small steps in a good direction maybe, but not take leaps. So we have to be much more imaginary. We have to reimagine things it's our job really to reimagine things that none of us could imagine only a year ago or whatever.
The speeches I heard and the conversations we had always lead it to exactly that attitude that you were saying. We need to foresee what's going to happen, but you never tell this in a personal way that it is you. It's more always your team and the members you share bits and pieces from. And this is something what I would love to ask as one of the last questions before we come to a short question game. if you have like some sentences around what makes your team go round, and what's the most important thing to mention and to inspire our listeners, how do you manage your team, and how do you manage motivation, even if it's sometimes not so easy, but you always bring intensity in, is what I feel when just speaking some words with you. So how do you manage that one?
I think, you know, we're a collective, and more than a company, maybe. We're friends. We share values of how we want to work together, and how we want to, you know, be as individuals, whether it's at work or at home. But we also share a vision and passions, I think. We're quite diverse in other ways, but we share those core values, and we share a vision of where we want to take Houdini, and where we want to contribute to a world, you know, that we don't see today, or that but believe that we can create together with others. So it's really a passion project, and I think that we all realize that it's not one person that drives that, but it's really a collective.
I love the word collective. It's
exploring.
It's a new,
yeah.
I love it.
Exploring way of doing it, and I that, of course, I mean, it's, I'm sitting here with you now, this is a typical, there's always the spokesperson, but I think it's really important. I would never have been able to do what we've been doing ideas come from everywhere in our company. They need to come from everywhere. We don't have a sustainability department for sure. Sustainability initiatives comes from everywhere. And we have to constantly question not only conventions on the, in the world around us, but question our own conventions. And that is also something that I think we've brought into our culture, to make sure that what was true and right yesterday might not be true and right tomorrow. So it's constantly, you know, exploring again and evolving. Maybe that's my biggest job, because it's also, we have a lot of fun. We love hanging out together, and my colleagues do. For sure, they're great friends, and I love seeing that. But sometimes maybe my work is to bring in some new element that is not the most comfortable, maybe, but you know, another worldview that we can learn from. I think cross pollination is not about hanging out with only those that are like you, but rather the opposite, to make sure that we meet other perspectives and learn from those. We have fun, and my job is to encourage that fun, and my job is to encourage that innovation to enable what we want to enable. But my job is also to, you know, add some of that that is not in our Houdini bubble, but is important for us to make sure that we continue learning and evolving.
Thank you so much. This is I do not want to stop, because there are so many things to explore, and I'm sure we do have a different opportunity to share mindset and thoughts as we hopefully continue. So if you agree, I would love to move to the last part of our podcast and of our conversation today, which is a short questionnaire on how could this happen to me, like whether positive or challenging or whatever. It's about 5 to 8 questions. And if you are ready, I would love to start.
I'm ready.
You're ready.
A little worried about what's coming, but yes, I guess I'm ready.
You didn't need to. You answered a lot of that anyhow, but I would love to keep like... I'll start. Your most awkward business moment.
Well, that must be when I'm terrible at names. I remember a lot of other things, but names is something that I have troubles remembering. So I had a list of all the people I had to mention in a speech, and I had a note in my back pocket, and when I was on stage and brought that note into my hands to read it, I had put the wrong paper in the wrong pocket, so I had like a bank statement with me up on stage, so no help there. Very typical. I'm not good with paperwork.
Your biggest surprise?
My biggest surprise. I know a good surprise is that there's such an amazing drive in the world right now, in terms of moving in a new direction. I can see it in every company, in our all our colleagues in the business, in youth, in the youth movement, and everywhere. It's completely amazing to see this will and potential mind shift towards something better, so that we can get to work for real towards the society and the planet we could create. That's actually a surprise, because we've had so many years of talking about this and seeing very little response, or really little engagement, or even understanding in our way of looking at, you know, the world and how we are consuming everything that makes life worth living. But now everything is coming to place, and people are starting to shift. Fantastic, and a surprise.
your most outstanding idea?
I don't know about that. My most outstanding idea.
Feels as the construction of your life, and Odini is the idea. So if you agree, we continue, because you're,
you know,
if there is one, of course, love to share, but it feels like it's too narrow.
Yeah, I guess I would say that there's no silver bullet. I have an expression I'll share instead. It's not about cracking the code, it's about catching the rhythm. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good one.
That's a very good one.
And I think that's the one I live by, maybe. I try to, and at least. Because we don't have the silver bullet, we don't have the solution, but we have to catch the rhythm of society and nature, and, you know, constantly see it as a journey, a learning and a joyful journey. And as I mentioned earlier, it's maybe the adventure of a lifetime what we're exploring now with this massive transition. But anyways, I would say that.
Your most inspiring moment.
My most inspiring moment. I used to do a lot of ocean sailing. I remember once when I was, at dawn, and I was alone navigating, and everyone else, we were only three on the boat, but the others were asleep. And at dawn, and there was no wind, so not a lot of advanced sailing, but suddenly the ocean started boiling at the horizon, kind of, because there were so many dolphins who kind of celebrated the start of a new day, it felt like, because they were like, it was amazing. It was boiling of, you know, dolphins jumping and turning, and it was fantastic. I think that's probably my coolest moment. Ooh. In my life.
Your most reliable source.
My most reliable source, that's... I think that might actually be my husband. He's very, very... I'm very enthusiastic, and he's very realistic and analytical. That's a reliable source. I have many reliable sources. I'm so thankful for them.
Do you want to recommend a book or a podcast or a film? What inspired you shortly?
I'd love to recommend a book or two. I would say that if you haven't read Kate Raworth's Donut Economics, that's a brilliant book everyone should read, especially economists. And then I am reading Braiding Sweetgrass right now, and I can't remember the author, but that is a beautiful book. Another one that I could absolutely recommend is The Good Ancestor, and that is a book that has to do with the short-termism of today, and how we need to get back to a longer perspective of time, and how we can become a good ancestor. I think it's a beautiful thought, and it's a beautiful book.
Well, thank you very much. And last question would be, how can people get in touch with you?
Please get in touch with me on LinkedIn or via email. LinkedIn is a good one, but I'm terrible with all these channels. Well, you know, Kim, that I'm also lousy with technology and devices. But all these channels as well, we have so many channels for connection now that I have a hard time keeping up with it. But LinkedIn, I would suggest, is a good place. Okay. And please do contact us, or me.
It was a huge pleasure, Eva. We are finished. We managed. Thank you very much. I know that was a huge, not technical challenge, and for me it was really a special challenge because I'm trying to keep like focusing on bits and pieces. But I know your world is so much bigger than just put it in 45 minutes. So, thanks a lot for your time. And do you want to send a message out to the persons listening for their day and how to engage, you can do it now, and otherwise I'll thank you so much from my heart and wish you a very good day.
Well, likewise, have a great day, Kim, and thanks for listening. Keep up the great work, everyone. We have so much to win and so much to lose if we don't do the right thing.
Yeah, thanks so much. And if our listeners liked what they hear, please inspire us with quotes, likes, or recommendations and input. Thanks, everybody. And of course, see you next time. Bye.
Hey, the jump off with a personal message. Do you like my podcast or not? Then help me get better or stay good, preferably via LinkedIn. And please spread the word, share it, and make our content even more relevant. Thank you very much, and see you next time.